Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
And this is the first podcast of a fresh new year, 2017. Whole new year of new movies. However, since it's the first week of January, it's actually the continuation of 2016 films.
Right. So yeah, it's a tough one because there's still just some things that are considered awards contenders for this for the next Oscars, and usually January and February we start to get into some of the doldrums as well.
Most of these movies have already opened in select cities to make sure they qualified for their Oscar runs. But January is, you just brought it up, typically the dumping ground for crap.
Yes.
And I'm not saying 25% of the films we're going to talk about today are. You can find good in everything.
That's right.
But I think this is the strongest weekend of film in Cinema Clash history.
For you.
There are 3 4-star films.
For the indie-minded crowd.
This never happened before, and I don't think will ever happen again.
Yes, and there's really nothing that I think is a huge mainstream opening, but I'm happy for you, Charlie.
I just had the time of my life this week. Batting leadoff, my third favorite film from last year, A Monster Calls.
Mm-hmm.
I think once a year, you should have just a physical breakdown in the theater. And it hasn't, I look forward to that once a year, and I don't think it's happened in the last 3 or 4 years, but this one tore me to pieces, tore me to shreds. I had a problem.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And so you loved it, right?
I did. I loved everything about it.
I think the more tears you get out of Charlie, then the more stars the movie will get. It's a feat.
It takes its child protagonist, its kid, and the kid's in every scene. He's 12 years old. It takes him seriously. It's like, you know what? I recognize you as a 12-year-old, have your own feelings, and I'm going to take your feelings seriously. His mother is ill. In fact, she's terminally ill. She is on death's door. And A Monster Calls is about the 12-year-old, Connor O'Malley, processing this information. How do you understand it? It's a very confusing time. How do you move forward? How do you wrap this all up and just get out of bed every day? And it's based on a novel. It's adapted from a novel by Patrick Ness. It's directed. It's a Spanish production by J.A. Bayona. It was filmed in Barcelona. He did 2007's The Orphanage and 2012's The Impossible. So he's into family drama.
Also brutal to watch,
yeah,
I remember.
That was, so he knows drama. He knows family drama. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I noticed this later. I didn't actually pick up on it the first time I watched it. Sigourney Weaver plays the grandma. It's a generational shift. It's the first time she's ever played a grandmother. She has aged up a bracket. And on one hand, okay, good for you, Sigourney, still getting work. But on the other hand, oh man, I'm getting old. Sigourney Weaver's playing grandma.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's kind of like when I first saw Susan Sarandon playing a grandma. And it reminded me of that. That yes, it was just this leap. And she's good as the grandma, but I felt that she sort of drifted in and out of the accent that she was supposed to have. So I was.
That's right. She's supposed to be British.
Yeah, and I didn't feel like the British accent was all that consistent throughout. And so every once in a while, I kind of was a little too aware that it was Sigourney Weaver playing a British grandma.
Well, the kid playing Connor, his name's Lewis McDougall. He is very good.
Mm-hmm.
He had one of the supporting character plots in Pan. So I've seen him before, but he wasn't Peter Pan. He's an artist. He draws and sketches, and it helps him process his sadness feelings. And his drawing, it doesn't necessarily come to life, but outside his bedroom window, he can see this really old stone church, and this huge yew tree is what it is. And at 12:07 a.m., it's every night now, it comes to life, this huge tree, and it's gargantuan. It takes up a lot of space, and it's motion captured, and it's voiced by Liam Neeson in, mm-hmm, I think, a very strong voiceover performance.
Absolutely.
And he has rules. He said, Connor O'Malley, and my Liam Neeson brogue, I'm going to tell you 3 stories, and then you are going to tell me the 4th. And then A Monster Calls kind of chops itself up into segments then. The stories are all animated, but differently. The first one's in watercolor, and by the end, there's really deep red hues and more computer animation. What did you think of the three story segments?
It was interesting. I mean, it was one of those movies that when you go back, I actually watched it a second time.
Look at you.
I know, because it had been quite a while since I saw it, and I felt like I really needed to process it a little more. And so I went back, I watched it again, and it all was sort of, it made more sense in hindsight, like on the second viewing. All the pieces fit together a whole lot more for me the second time around than they did the first time. So the stories were all very interesting because they all sort of ended with this moral that was things are not always as they appear, and there's a lot, nothing's black and white, there's a whole lot of gray. And so I thought these were, it was a very interesting device to tell this story and to get this little boy to kind of face his fears and face his own nightmares. So that's where they were all leading, was really to, you know, I'm going to tell you three stories and then you have to tell me what your nightmare has been about. And so he'd been having this nightmare. And so it's very compelling. The boy is so good. And Liam Neeson's voice is so iconic, and that really helps just move the movie along, even when it's getting very, very sad.
The tree, and I would have gotten it wrong, it's not 100% computer animated all the time. They actually built that head to scale when, you know, when it kind of is peering in his window, and his foot, when he's climbing on top of the foot. So the kid actor did have to do a lot of green screen work. Not easy for a kid, but there are those times where I think it helped just the atmosphere and the space of the film, where they actually had real big yew tree moments. And Felicity Jones, she is his ill mother. We just saw her in Rogue One in a very action film, and now she
very
has terminal cancer. She has a rough assignment, I think. She starts out already debilitated by chemo, and then she actually gets worse as the film goes on, and I think that'd be a tough role for an actress to play.
Yeah, especially because so much of the emotional pull of this story is the mom trying to protect her son from what's happening. And so she knows she's dying. She knows that he knows she's dying, but what do you do with that? And how do you try to protect him as much as you can and prepare for his future? And so it's a very interesting dynamic with her character and her mother, with the grandmother. And then there's a very strained relationship between the boy and the grandmother. And that's because the boy knows that, you know, when his mother dies, his life is going to change, and trying to figure out who is he going to live with? What is this going to mean? He's got an absentee father who lives in America with a new family. And so it's a lot for this boy to process. And it's a very interesting way. This movie takes a very interesting approach to just kind of, I guess, help children understand death and know that there are ways to process their grief and their anger and their fear, and that's okay. And I think that's really the underlying message of the movie, is this sucks and you're allowed to be angry and upset.
You're absolutely
off.
Right. You're allowed to be sad, mad, upset. If you got to break things, I'm not getting spoiled.
That's right.
You can go ahead and break things.
And he does.
And so I urge potential viewers out there, potential audience looking for a film this weekend, do not shy away from A Monster Calls just because you heard it's very sad. If anything, this is so much better for your preteens out there than whatever crap blockbuster animated schlock is already, you know, just dribbling out in January. This is real stuff.
It's real stuff, but you need to go in there knowing it's real stuff. I think certainly anyone, I'm sure since the screenplay was written by the same person who wrote the novel, you know that it's faithful to the book. And it was actually based on an idea by a woman who died of cancer at 47.
Before she had a chance to write the
before
book.
Before she had a chance to write it. So I think anyone who read the book and liked the book will be perfectly good to go see this movie. But anyone else, they just need to be aware of the subject matter so that if there is discussion that needs to take place afterwards, everyone's prepared for it.
Well, last week we did our top 10 list. Set it in stone. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We are good to go. And then I saw a movie and I had to go in and move some stuff around.
You did. I was wondering if that was going to happen.
Because it's really the last major release. It's Martin Scorsese waited. And he was editing all the way up until the last thing. A lot of critics groups are already voted. Didn't even get a chance to see this film. So it is the last movie really released for 2016. It's called Silence. And it is an epic. And I mean epic in scope and length. It is 2 hours and 41 minutes long. But it only felt like 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, right. Oh, good.
And it is, I loved this movie. It's not polarizing. A lot of people love this movie. Sure, there's a spattering of pans, but it's not like La La Land
but
love.
But only critics have seen it.
Yeah.
So I don't trust that. You know, wait till the real people get to see
it. I love how the critics says, I don't trust the critics.
Wait till real people get to see this movie, because honestly, most people don't want to see a movie that lasts over 2.5 hours. It's got to be incredibly compelling. And I'm not sure this is a story.
Titanic was that long.
Yeah, but Titanic, you know, was Titanic. This is, 17th century monks.
Not monks.
Not monks. Priests. What were they? Priests.
Padres, if you will.
And so, I mean, an amazing cast. I unfortunately had to miss this movie this week, so I may not ever catch up with it because, frankly, it is not subject matter that particularly appeals to me. From everything I read, there's a lot of violence and persecution, and that's just not my sort of thing. I don't want to start the new year off watching a lot of torture and violence and bloodshed and it's just not my cup of tea.
The violence and brutality, of which there is a lot, it's not gratuitous. It's there for a reason. And this is Scorsese. I'm not a religious guy. I shouldn't identify with this film nor care about its subject matter, but it drew me in. He's studying it through the medium of film. And he mentioned some big leading performances. And this is Andrew Garfield's movie. Liam Neeson's on the poster, and that's ridiculous. He's in this movie for like 7 minutes. And this is Andrew Garfield's in every scene. This is his film, and him and Adam Driver. They are Portuguese priests. They're Jesuits. So they like to teach, instruct, and they hear a rumor that their mentor, their spiritual leader, Father Ferreira, played by Liam Neeson, has disavowed the faith. They call it apostatized, because Japan in the 17th century transformed from a series of feudal lords into the shogunate. One clan took over. And when that happened, they kicked out the Christians. There was already a mass missionary program in Japan. There were 300,000 Christians. The shogun took over and said, "Get out. If you don't get out, I'm going to kill you." And man, did he. It is some of the scenes in there about how they come up to kill priests and the Japanese citizens who do not come back to Buddhism but stay in Christianity or are discovered to be practicing Christianity in secret are brutal. I mean, the torture you see in this film is, I've never seen it before, the methods they come up with. So Father Rodriguez and Father Garupe, that's Garfield and Driver, sneak back onto Japan because they're going to uncover the mystery. What happened to Father Ferreira? And they run into a couple villages of secret Christians. They said, "Thank you for returning. Guide us again. Hear my confession. Lead us in baptisms. Take over again." And they're okay. They're just like, "Hey, we're back here to save some souls." And of course, the Inquisitor finds out. People are rounded up, people are arrested, more torture happens. It's a beautiful film. It's supposed to take place on the west coast of Japan near Nagasaki, and it's just too expensive to film in Japan. They filmed in Taiwan. It's gorgeous. The mountains crowd the shore, they're right on the beach. There's always smoke, always fog, and it appears natural looking. That's like these geysers coming out of the ground. And that geyser water is also used for torture because it's very hot.
It just sounds better and better with every sentence there, Charlie.
It didn't feel that long to me. It got philosophical. You are priests. I'm asking you to disavow your faith or I'm going to kill all of these people. Is that pride? Why don't you just say you disavow your faith but keep your faith in your heart? Are you too prideful for that? And overall, it's about the silence. It's the one-way communication between the person and God. You talk to God, God doesn't talk back to you, even in your darkest hour. Like, where are you? I'm getting limbs chopped off here. Where are you? Talk to me. And that's when you start questioning faith. Maybe you're not really there.
So is this a movie for the faith-based crowd?
I think they'll like it more than the non-faith-based crowd. It's a movie for the open-minded faith-based, because it talks about losing faith. It's a film for Scorsese fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people who liked Gangs of New York, Mean Streets, Last Temptation of Christ, a very similar film.
None of which I really cared for.
Because the truly devout did not like The Last Temptation of Christ.
Right,
so it's like, what do you mean Jesus doubted on the cross? Well, maybe he did. You don't know. But Scorsese, in 1988, made a very long film about it, and it was celebrated. And this one, I think, is actually a little bit better than that one.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm just not a huge Scorsese fan. I've just always found his movies to be dark and long. And that's just generally.
Like The Departed?
The Departed was a little more towards what I do like.
The Aviator?
Oh, I love The Aviator.
Wolf of Wall Street?
Wolf of Wall Street was too long.
But look at, I think, these amazing epic films that he continuously churns out.
He does churn out epics, which is also why he also attracts these phenomenal casts. You know, and I love Andrew Garfield. I mean, we just saw him. It's amazing the overlap we're seeing now. We just saw Andrew Garfield in Hacksaw Ridge. So you see his versatility. Liam Neeson, we just saw as a giant tree.
And Adam Driver.
And Adam Driver, who we're going to talk about in the next film.
They're all people have recognized perhaps the new top-tier generation of actors and are employing them.
But they're also actors who love a good passion project.
Well, Adam Driver looks, they make him look Portuguese. He's got some ethnicity here. Andrew Garfield, not so much. So I had two minor quibbles with this film, is the language. We're supposed to pretend, we make believe they're speaking Portuguese, but they're speaking English, but they're speaking Portuguese accented English. So I guess that helps me keep me in the film and remind me that they're Portuguese, but if you're just going to speak English, don't make them put on a fake, which I assume is a Portuguese English accent. And then Andrew Garfield's hair.
In the commercials, yeah.
This man has a head of hair on him, and it is... It holds up very well in the 1600s without shampoo and conditioner.
Yeah, there we go. Very different. At least he had a buzz cut in Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm not sure I know you can't cut your hair a lot out there, but I see what you're doing.
Yeah, you know? All right. Well, this is one that I think it still has to be your cup of tea. I think you got to be a person who's really into possibly religious studies and into that whole aspect, or a Scorsese fan.
Well, I booted off The Brand New Testament, and I made this number 9.
Wow, I was wondering, okay.
That's what left.
All right.
Nothing against The Brand New Testament, still love that movie, but this one is just a wonderful, another Scorsese epic.
Okay.
But on a completely different note, and using Adam Driver as their transition, I know what I thought of Patterson, and I've talked about it on here before. I talked about it last week because it's an honorable mention of mine. What did you think of Patterson?
I liked Patterson okay, considering I'm not a huge indie fan. So as indies go, I liked it okay. I liked it well enough. It was different. It's a very quiet, contemplative film. It's sort of poetry on screen. And I love Adam Driver. So the fact that I do like watching Adam Driver helped a lot. It's quiet. It's about a guy named Patterson who's a bus driver in Patterson, New Jersey, and he writes poetry on the side and listens to the conversations that go on around him and on the bus while he's driving, and he kind of puts all of these things down into words and writes poems every day. And that's the whole movie. That truly is the movie. And so if you like Adam Driver, if you like Jim Jarmusch's stuff to begin with, the director, you're definitely going to like this one. So again, I liked it okay. I did not love it.
I love this movie. And I only like Jim Jarmusch. Coming in, I saw what he was going for, but he always kind of, I never loved anything. Coffee and Cigarettes, Mystery Train, Ghost Dog, Broken Flowers. Okay, I loved Mystery Train. That was good. But everything else, all right, it was very indie. It was very art house, and I appreciate it for what it was. Patterson just struck a note. It is poetry on screen. I really enjoy just sitting back and watching Adam Driver. It's a week in Adam Driver's life, Patterson's life. Every morning he wakes up naturally at 6:15, gets ready to go to work, looks at the matchbooks, drives the bus, and his poetry, that day's poem he's going to write at lunchtime or after work, is formed by the conversations he's eavesdropping on the bus. There's a twin motif that happens when he picks up a twin vibe. There's some Easter eggs in here. Mm-hmm. You remember Moonrise Kingdom?
Yeah.
Shikuski and Susie, they were the two kids who ran away. They show up on the bus.
Oh, I didn't notice
that. They're the anarchist kids.
Oh.
Mystery Train, if you remember all the way back to that 1989 film, that guy. It's actually kind of a similar film. Boyfriend and girlfriend show up in Memphis, and they're from Japan. Don't speak a word of English, but they're fighting over who's better. Elvis Presley or Carl Perkins. And he shows back up here on a pilgrimage to discover William Carlos Williams, the very famous New Jersey poet, who I think the poetry in this film is modeled after. It's life as ritual. It's life on autopilot. I love the scenes in the bar. Every night he walks his dog, and he goes to have one beer in a bar. He kind of cracks wise with the bartender. He looks at this couple over here having problems. I thought there was going to be some payoff. Like, he's got Marvin the dog. I thought someone's going to steal Marvin. I thought just something weird was going to happen. Yeah. And nothing does happen.
There is no conflict. There is no tension in this movie. But it's not boring. So, I mean, I give it that, you know, because sometimes my complaint is that these indies sometimes just feel boring to me. It's engrossing in a slice of life kind of way. And he is married to this woman who's sort of almost the opposite of him, is very colorful, and she's sort of an artist in her own right, but much more expressive, whereas he's much more quiet. And so his poetry includes sort of like love letters, love poems to her. And so their relationship is just kind of there as a subplot. So that part was all very interesting. But yeah, there is no real drama here. It is just one of those movies that you just kind of sit back, watch. It's almost like we're listening in the same way he's listening in. And so it's that same feel and vibe. And it's an interesting movie, but definitely a movie for the indie crowd. And Jim Jarmusch is just an indie director. I mean, that's what he does. And when I talked about Adam Driver, I think this was a passion project for him to some degree, that I read that he agreed to do this movie without ever seeing the script. That it was just he wanted to work with this director. The concept appealed to him. The idea of doing this very contemplative role appealed to him. And so I think there's payoff there for everyone involved in the film. Whether or not it really will gain any traction, we will see.
You brought up his wife. He's routine and she is random chaos.
Mm-hmm.
One day it's I'm gonna become a country music star. The next day is I'm gonna turn my brownies into a business. And she loves patterns and decorating the house. And she's played by Golshifteh Farahani. I really like her. She's a Persian actress. We've seen her in About Ellie and The Patient Stone. Very strong actress. I was very surprised to see her pop up in this in Patterson. But you're right. This is for the indie crowd. I saw it with a crowd at Middleburg, which is supposedly an indie crowd, but that's a different kind of clientele. Mm-hmm. Nobody clapped. Nobody. You clap at film festivals. This is what you do. There's film fanatics there, and even if the film's not good, people give a smattering of applause. This is no. I'm the only one in that crowd who
you were internally
movie.
Clapping.
I was, because I didn't want to be the only dude doing it, but they did not like Patterson.
Really? Because I don't think it's the kind of movie that anyone would necessarily not like or just dislike. You might not love it. You might not particularly like it a lot to recommend other people. And it's really tough at a film festival when you're seeing so much.
I thought about it this way. Think La La Land. Sebastian, Ryan Gosling, I love jazz. Let me teach you jazz, everything jazz. And Emma Stone's like, I don't get it. I don't understand jazz. I don't hate it, but I don't like it either. It just sounds like a bunch of notes. I think Jim Jarmusch films, and Patterson in particular, is like Emma Stone. You have to know how to watch this movie. You can't just go in cold and try to and pick up his vibe. You need to know what you're getting into. You need to know how to watch it.
It helps.
Finally, the movie that has nothing to do with the three of these. This is a January release. Arsenal. Arsenal is an action thriller. It's about a pair of brothers, one petty criminal, one guy on the straight and narrow, successful versus just small-time crook. The older brother had to take care of his younger brother because, you know, their parents are out of the picture. He had to step up. There was violence involved. He's like, I kind of sacrificed myself for you, little bro. So now that I'm kidnapped and I need $350,000 of ransom money, I need you to pay it off. Older brother Mikey is played by Jonathan Scheck, and his younger brother JP. From Entourage, Adrian Grenier, yes. Vinny Chase himself.
Vinny. Aquaman.
I want to talk about the style of this film. This is, it's from a company called Emmett Furla Oasis Films, EFO Films. They have latched on to a particular cycle. They produce B-level, B-grade second-tier action thrillers with a formula. Bruce Willis, Nicolas Cage, John Cusack. They employ these actors in various roles and situations in all of their same films because they, you know, they can afford to pay them probably $1 million a pop. And these older actors, these older action film actors take this money and do this horrible movie, which then you know they don't want to do because they're probably trying to fund some other passion project. The only reason I would say anyone go see this movie, because it's ridiculous and it's stock and it's formulaic, is Nicolas Cage. He's in six movies this year, and this is the first one, and he's just, you know what, I'm going to go have some fun, and I'm going to read this character that I should just play like any other buddy else would, and I'm not going to. I'm going to go nuts. He puts on the fakest-looking wig, the fakest-looking mustache. He looks ridiculous, and he screams a lot of his lines, and it's fascinating.
Well, the synopsis alone was enough to make me go, this is just not a movie I really want to kick off my new year watching. And so I just couldn't bring myself to get the link to watch it because it was listed, you know, it was an action thriller rated R for brutal violence and drug use and language. And I was like, no, I don't think so. Although the cast intrigued me. But what was more intriguing than the fact that I thought it was a great cast is that I haven't seen any of those cast members doing any promotion whatsoever for this film.
You don't promote a film like this. It's in 10 theaters, I think, in America, and it's designed to make money on video on demand for people scrolling through to watch something on a Saturday night who only like action movies. And they'll see an action movie with Nicolas Cage and John Cusack on the movie poster, and then they'll click, okay, I'll watch that. Not knowing that, you know, this is geared toward people who like to watch brutal violence. When a bullet goes in, they want to see it come out. And you do. The really disappointing part about this film is John Cusack. What are you doing here, man? Like, Nicolas Cage had fun. You didn't. You look miserable.
Did he take it too seriously?
Yeah, he did. And it was, the character didn't need to be there. It was just they inserted this character to really not do anything. He doesn't further the plot. He's not there at the climax. He's just there to squeeze John Cusack into this movie because it'll probably make another $500,000 if they do. That was a bad move. He's just all in black and black bandana, which looks ridiculous, or a black ball cap, sunglasses, well, even, you know, daytime, nighttime, chewing on a toothpick, you know, just and mumbling his lines. He did not have a good time. Nicolas Cage had a blast.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think people who just look at the cast and way down the line when they're just looking for something that they hadn't seen before might stumble upon it and start watching it. I will not seek this one out.
I've seen worse. I've seen a lot worse, but yeah, stay away from Arsenal, especially this weekend when there's so many great films in the theater.
Yeah, or
please
catch up.
Don't
catch
go
up.
See
yeah.
Arsenal because
no,
of that.
No, don't see Arsenal. Go catch up on one of the other ones. Even if you don't see one of the new releases coming out this week, if you're not really indie-minded, except for Monster Calls, I would say, you know, go catch up on La La Land or Hacksaw Ridge. Or
I was going to say, even if you're if you're the action guy who's primed to watch Arsenal and you haven't seen Hacksaw Ridge,
right.
Shame on you.
Exactly. So I think you got to set your priorities.
All right. Well, a very strong start to 2017, but I think it's going to start to fade after this a little bit just because we're really getting into those January releases. And there's a couple, there's a movie released today. They didn't even screen for critics. The new Underworld starring Kate Beckinsale. It's like Underworld 5 or 6.
And Kate Beckinsale.
That's what she does, though. She's in this. That's her franchise.
You'd think, though, that would be a movie you might be interested in seeing. But
well, I've seen all of those movies. I'd like to see that movie.
Oh, see, I had no real.
Vampires versus Werewolves, Hannah.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
All right, quick recap. A Monster's Call, best film we talked about today, takes its kid seriously, and it will tear you apart.
Yeah, of the ones we've talked about, this is definitely the one that is probably the most mainstream accessible.
Any other week, Silence probably would have been my favorite one of this week, but it came out the same week as Monster's Call. Silence, very long, but very Scorsese.
I will stay silent.
Ooh, that's a good one. Patterson, You know what? If you want to challenge yourself and you think you like indie movies, give Patterson a shot, and I think you'd be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, as indie movies go, it's quiet. It's contemplative. If you like poetry, go for it.
Arsenal. Nope.
Nope.
All right. Well, on behalf of the Cinema Clash, thank you very much for listening.
Have a good weekend. Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.